Blog Talk Radio.
There's a direct relationship between having the businesses and being in prison. Go find an see how many Asians you can find in American prisons. They ain't going to be in there. But 51% of your prison will be black because blacks don't have any businesses and industries. There's a direct link. Blacks won't practice group economics. Blacks won't practice group politics. If you don't practice, you're setting yourself up. I told that five-story building, you're setting yourself to get wiped out. Understand the nature of race, which is economics. If you build the first floor, it's economic. Build your businesses and your industries. Control buildings and industry, and put that pools in your money, and hold that money, and practice group economics with it. Arab and Asian money bounces 12 to 13 times for a lead. Jewish money bounces 18 times. Black folk got to learn how to practice group economics. Black Americans spend every penny they get outside their own community. Then you take the money and the wealth that you get from that first floor and go to the second floor. The second floor is politics. You then take that money on the first floor and you control your politics. Black folk must quit allowing people to tell them to go out and vote. Vote for what? Nobody's going to do anything for black folk in politics. Politics is controlled by money. Major corporations who got the money. That's what controls politics. If you have no money, you have no say-so, you have no benefits coming. So you take your money and you control and you take your money on the first floor, you buy every politician on the second floor. And any politician you can't buy, you rent or lease them to get what you need. Then once you get the second floor under control with the politician, with your money, then you go to the third floor. The third floor is then is the police department and the court system. You take your money from the first floor and your politics on the second floor and you control the court system and the police department. Then the fourth floor, then is media. You then take the money that you generate off the first floor from business and industries and you go after radio stations, TV stations, newspapers, and cable systems so that you can now inform and communicate with your own people. Right now, black folk own and control less than 35,000ths of 1% of the media in the United States. Out of 12,000 radio stations, black folk own about something like about 75 or 80. That's all. You own no cable systems. You don't have a daily newspaper. You have nothing of importance. You got about one black TV station. So you can't communicate with your people. You can't inform your people. You can't do anything. You can have Rush Limbaugh and all the rest of the guys talking about racism all day long and bad-mouthing you. And O'Reilly's. They can call black folk all kind of names all day long. What are you going to do? You can't respond. You can't even communicate with your own people because you don't have an economic base. 51% of all the prisons in the United States are black people. You only make up 12% of the population. That's no accident. It's because you don't control the economics and the politics. And they're going to go after the weakest people they can get their hands on to incarcerate. And that's the black folk. And what are you going to do in response to them when they over-incarcerate you? You're going to go out and have a march, a demonstration. We're going to march. March for what? Who cares? Marching never changed anything.
What's it like to live where you work? For most of us, that's unthinkable. But imagine living and working at one of the biggest factories in the world. A workplace the size of Monaco. For these 17,000 employees, it's reality. They come from all over China, seeking a brighter future at this factory called Yupa. Workers craft coffee makers, irons, and electric grills in staggering quantities every single day. But Yupa is more than a steady paycheck. It's home. People get married here. They send their kids to school here. But the work never stops. Yupa's managers are on a mission to produce new products for every corner of the globe that could forever change the way we think of made in China. Step behind the closed doors of modern China into a factory the size of a city. Welcome to the place that calls itself Factory of the World. By the time you finish watching this program, Yupa's 17,000 Chinese workers will produce nearly 20,000 electrical appliances. Every day they churn out 60,000 irons. Every month, Yupa makes 36,000 coffee makers. That's two new machines for every Starbucks on the planet. And every year, these laborers produce a staggering 18 million electric grills. Stacked side by side, they'd span the Atlantic from New York to London. Chances are you own something built right here. Factories like these don't exist in North America or Europe, but they're not uncommon in China, where labor is cheap. Yupa runs on human sweat alone. No need for robots. To ensure non-stop production, workers need a steady stream of parts. Someone has to make sure those parts get to the right place in time. This is Ming Long Pa. He started work at Yupa in 1994.
I'm in charge of production control. Production control is the brain of the factory. Its main function is to coordinate each department.
If any of Yupa's factories run out of parts, Mr. He's job is on the line.
The production line cannot wait. We have to guarantee that our production is smooth. Running out of materials would affect our efficiency, affect our productivity, and affect our revenue. So I have to fix this in the shortest time possible.
Today, a problem at the iron factory needs smoothing out. Workers on the iron line are low on a crucial part. To keep up production, they need 2,000 units, and they need them now.
Just now I found out the main problems here at the iron department. One major problem is the case for model 603. They need 2,000 right now.
Traditional plants use outside suppliers for their components, not Yupa. To slash costs and stay competitive, Yupa builds its own parts on site. So Mr. He's supplier is only a bike ride away.
3,000个，赶快送过来。好，这边没有了，已经没有了。是是。
But even the supplier is dangerously low on stock.
大概因为现在生产线已经停掉了，然后我大概要赶快把它送过去哈。好的。一点钟准时安排送料。对对对。
Mr. He has found barely enough parts to last the day.
好，谢谢谢谢。好。
When he gets another urgent call. Now the grill factory is low on a crucial component. Grills are the company's most profitable products. Yupa started producing one line of grills in 1994. Now, 60 assembly lines churn out 800 different models. Workers make one grill every 12 seconds. That's 50,000 grills per day, or 1.5 million per month. Enough grills for every person in Dallas. Grills bring in $350 million a year. But Yupa wants more. Little wonder Liu Jinye acts like a general leading his troops to war. By next year, managers expect workers to crank out $500 million worth of grills. Yupa's profits have to rise to outmuscle the competition. Mr. Ye supervises 850 workers on 30 lines.
We have to coordinate all these workers and pull all their thoughts into one. It takes teamwork to accomplish our goals, to get the results we want.
Mr. Ye is obsessed with quality control. His aim? Boost output without compromising quality. In a factory this big, with a production run so massive, even the hyper-efficient Mr. Ye hits a roadblock.
This holder piece holds the grill plate. What we're seeing now is the assembly of this piece. The problem is the size. It's the wrong size.
They've run out of part number 2627. It attaches the core heating element to the frame. Without this simple component, assembly lines will shut down. Unless Mr. Ha finds a fresh supply. And soon.
If we don't get them the parts, 6 production lines will have to stop.
When every part is on hand, grills assemble like a simple puzzle. Wires are linked to the heating element, and the element is fixed to the plate.
When it's not locked down properly, it will fall off. If it falls off, it will burn the hands of our customers and consumers. This job is very important.
Then it's time to connect the power cord.
The brown wire is live and the green wire is neutral. The one with the writing on it matches the brown wire. Connect them and that makes the wire live.
Each grill is inspected for flaws in construction or appearance. Finally, every grill is tested to make sure everything is in working order. On a typical day, Mr. Ye's team must make 700 of Yupa's 50,000 grills. Missing parts cause delays, cost Yupa a fortune, and force workers into overtime to meet their quota. Finding the missing parts falls to Mr. Ha, and the pressure is on. Mr. He finally arrives, and he has good news. He's found 2,000 parts to keep the lines moving, and 50,000 more are on the way. Mr. He's day has ended on a high note. He heads home to a company-subsidized apartment only minutes away. His wife, Hong Zhang-yu, also works for the plant. Together, they lead a life of relative luxury. Family life in China is a communal affair. His parents and his in-laws live here, thanks to Yupa. It's one more reason workers are fiercely loyal to their company.
Our products all have the Made in China tag. I hope our products can bring to consumers a sense of joy, a sense of it's worth it. This is my biggest wish.
Fulfilling that wish will come at a cost.
When I first arrived here, I didn't know anyone else, and we all have to live together. It was really tough in the beginning.
Yupa's next generation of workers must leave their families behind and devote their lives to the company. It's a place tourists never see. The new face of modern China. Competitive, hungry for profits, and ready to take on the world. Located near the city of Xiaomeng, the Yupa complex sprawls for 1.8 square kilometers, almost the size of Monaco.
We have about over 20 buildings here. You know, the largest building, you know, equal like 4 football fields. You can have 60 to 70 assembly lines. Each assembly line can have 25 to 35 workers in the line.
25 years ago, there were no factories here, only farms.
In the 1980s, the Chinese government decided capitalism wasn't so bad after all. The communist regime established so-called special economic zones, designated places for free markets and foreign investments. Yupa, a Taiwanese company, moved here in 1988. In a few short years, it became the largest manufacturer of irons, electric grills, and espresso makers in the world. Yupa is a city unto itself, with restaurants and convenience stores, soccer fields and basketball courts, and living quarters for everyone from students to families. Success made it big, and size keeps it successful. Mass production runs push down costs. Almost all parts are made on-site, keeping supply costs low and parts within easy reach.
Because we are in this location pretty much isolated, we don't have satellite suppliers around us to build, you know, parts for us. So we had to do it in-house.
Okay, up here multitasking this morning. Today's podcast is titled Leaving Egypt During the Pandemic. Oh, wait a minute, I got another phone off. I got to disconnect that number. Okay, hang up. There we go. Leaving Egypt during the pandemic. I've noticed two types of people, generally speaking, during the pandemic. You have people that the pandemic, on an income level, household income level, that they haven't missed a beat. Matter of fact, some are doing, they're prospering during the pandemic. Then you have a lot of others that have been struggling during the pandemic. And, I mean, they're dealing with, you know, layoffs. You know, when the pandemic started, like if certain jobs like restaurants, bars, you know, those type businesses, they closed down. And, but still, the certain bills had to be paid. Well, number one, you still had to eat. So you need money to go to the grocery store. You know, that's just the way it is. Number two, and this is all before they started cutting stimulus checks, and then there were guidelines to receive a stimulus check. So, you know, you people, man, had to scramble. And then certain jurisdictions, you still got to pay your property taxes. Certain municipalities, I'm in one of them, where the city owns the electric company. So if you don't pay your electric bill, now mind you, okay, the city government, many city governments had orders to, you know, certain businesses had to, you know, shut down. However, at this same government, when that electric bill came due, you had to pay it or they were going to cut you off. So the pandemic's really been a real roller coaster for not only tens of thousands but millions of people on a global basis. You know, so that's why I titled today's podcast Leaving Egypt During the Pandemic, because if we go to the, and I'm just a point of reference, it's not a religious thing, the book of Exodus, Old Testament. When the Hebrews left Egypt, and the Bible is basically written in a lot of allegory and symbology, the primary source of income, or livelihood might be a better word, the primary livelihood of the Hebrews prior to leaving Egypt was they were employed as slaves. And, you know, they were working for the slave wages. They had a guaranteed 3 hots in the cot. They didn't have to worry about a place to stay while they were in Egypt. Now, these are the slaves. They had a guaranteed place to stay. They had guaranteed work under slave conditions. And they can eat and sustain their families, all guaranteed by the government, which is context of this story, Egypt. All right, now let's look at it. They didn't have to worry about work, although it came at the cost of a whip, but they didn't have to worry about it. They didn't have to worry about where to sleep, what to eat, and how to take care of their families. All characteristics of slavery, all right, all guaranteed by the government, in this case known as Egypt under Pharaoh. So Moses says, all right, we got to bounce. So I'm fast. I'm cutting a lot of the story out. They leave Egypt, and they're leaving. Now think about the psychological machinations going through people's head. They were used to the guaranteed 3 hots in the cot. They were used to all that. They didn't have to worry about going hungry. They didn't have to worry about starving. So when Moses took them, we're bouncing, we're leaving. You know, you got some people, you know, because when you leave that, you know, freedom cost. Freedom cost. Freedom ain't free. All right. So quite a number of them were grumbling at Moses because they were hungry. You know, they were out in the desert. You know, some days they didn't have anything to eat. They had to wait for the quail to basically fly over. But what they had gotten used to and comfortable with, that old way of sustainability, which was slavery, see, slavery was more comfortable to them than being free. Not all of them, but quite enough. You know, and then they came to an impossible situation. This is the Red Sea. That's what that symbolizes. You're facing an impossible situation. Because, see, if you go back to Egypt, you're going to get killed, put back in bondage. More than likely killed. You'll be very fortunate if you were able to find your way back to that. But so it's either get killed by going back to what you think is a comfortable way of life that you've grown accustomed to, or face this Red Sea. And that's how I look at what's happening today on a global basis. That's why I titled this podcast today, Leaving Egypt During the Pandemic. Now, let me give you, we weren't all last week at all. We have some, me and Robin had some powwows and some strategy sessions. Now, we weren't all in all because I couldn't get on, mainly because I was relying on, I got a source of income or sources of income out of New Orleans. New Orleans last week was shut down 100%. Shut down 100%. Parts of the city are still shut down. But last week, it was shut down 100%. So, one of the epiphanies or aha moments that I had last week was, you know what? you can't depend on certain no particular one, two, or three sources of income. Now, I had a chance to meet probably about 15 years or so ago. A guy named Al Dudley, who's the brother of Joe Dudley of Dudley Products, hair care products, the cosmetic company. And he told me, because I purchased a book that his brother wrote called Walking by Faith. Very good book by Joe Dudley Sr. He said, and this is fundamental, you can apply this to any business. Whatever business that you're going to start, hair care, real estate, convenience stores, flipping burgers, he said, get yourself 100 customers. Now, that's a base. You want to get more than that, but at least get yourself 100. You don't have to start off with 100 because, once again, as we often say on here, everything starts with one. You know, but, you know, you get one, you know, double it to two. You know, you can, any way you want to put it together, but, you know, it might take you a year to get 100 customers. It might take you 2 years, depending on the structure of business and, you know, how you plan it all out. But get yourself 100 customers. And that makes sense because had I had 100 customers a week ago, we would have been on air Monday through Friday as we usually are. Because I'm looking at, if you got 100 customers, and let's take the 80-20 rule. Even when things are going well and normal, if you got 100 customers, the 80-20 rule really plays out. You know, you're going to have about 20, maybe 25% that for whatever reason, they won't be able to pay you. Just like life events. You know, somebody got sick, somebody, whatever. You know, a hurricane, in my case, a hurricane blew through town. Okay. Although I'm not in that town, but I still have a vested interest in that town. So, and we're talking about the last time something passed through that city was 16 years ago. Okay. So, if I had 100 widget system, and it can be anything. I'm just using widgets because that's generally speaking. Then if 20% or 25% don't pay, so what? You still got revenue coming in from 75 to 80 widgets, which means basically you're doing better than the average person. Number two, nothing stops. Number three, you won't miss a beat, and you can do anything you basically want to do. So that's where I'm at right now. I've left Egypt, and I'm looking at, and I recommend everybody do this, whatever business that you're already in, or if you're thinking about getting into business, you want to get yourself at least 100 clients, make that one of your first. Now, you want to take that 100 and break that down. You know, and once you get to 100, you know, you might want to double that to 200, 300, up to 1,000 or 1,000 plus. But have yourself a basic 100 clients, which means on a monthly basis, you already know this. that anywhere from 20 to 25% on a regular monthly basis, for whatever reason, will not be able to pay. That's okay. Because you still got revenue coming in from 75% to 80%, which means all your basics are covered, and you can still stack and have basically no distress. So if you make apple pies, lemonade, chop wood, fix cars, whatever, set it up where you got at bare minimum, fundamentally, 100 customers. So when a pandemic comes along, and I think that's the real, the pandemic, the common denominator that I've noticed is, it's just people, you know, they go from job to job, or there are no job openings, or this is just globally. But there are other people out here that are, that the pandemic has not affected at all. And these are people that basically they can live off the grid. Many do live on the grid, but you know, they've got their life structured where no matter what happens, no matter what the government says, they won't miss a beat. All right. So let's see. That's my whole spiel on leaving Egypt during the pandemic. Organize yourself where you can get, and it's September right now. So depending on, you know, it, I mean, one a week. Now for me, I'm looking at, okay, this month I need to get 8. And then every month until I reach 100 after that will be 10 new. Now I call mine geese, because I consider, I like the fable or the fable of the goose that laid the golden egg. I need to get 8 geese this month that lay just one golden egg a month. And then next month, October, you know, my goal is to get 10. Then the next month, December 10th. So that's 2 a week. Well, this month it'll be 2 a week. And then next month will be a little bit more than that, but it'll be no more than 10 on. Because that way, I get to know the names and personalities, they get to know me or whatever. But, you know, that's food for thought as, because as we come out of the pandemic, whenever that will be, and that'll be different from different places around the globe and different people in households. You know, you got people that, like, in some place like New York City, that owe like $100,000 in back rent. My prediction on that won't be paid back. The typical person who's got $100,000, even in New York City, they can go find a place and buy it. The court systems will be overflowing. Any cases going to run into, automatically they're going to run into, because look, it's September now. Okay. Next month, the end of next month, October 31st, once Halloween weekend hits, people globally get in the holiday mood. So any court actions that are taking place or initiated this month or next, before the 31st of October. Now, this is just my opinion. I'm speculating. They'll be thrown into 2022, and then some of that will probably go into 2023. Meanwhile, you've got to eat on a daily basis. you got expenses on a daily basis. And there's several businesses out here that I consider pandemic proof. One of them is communications. You know, your T-Mobile bill, your AT&T bill, your Metro PCS bill, whatever. If you don't pay those phone bills, you're out of luck. Pandemic-proof business. A lot of these utility companies. Now, I don't know how it is for each and every one across the United States, but I know in my neck of the woods, if you don't pay the electric, the city, which owns the electric, the primary electric company here, which is a monopoly, they're pandemic proof. They might recommend, at one time they were recommending, they were giving payment plans to people who had an electric bill over $1,000. But if it was under that, you know, they might recommend, well, go to someplace like Catholic Charities, where Catholic Charities can't bail out everybody. So you're left on your own. So that's why we talk about solar on here and these other things. So we'll do more on that as the weeks go by. But in any event, get yourself, as you're leaving Egypt during this pandemic, that's what I call it, leaving Egypt. Get yourself at all possible 100 paying clients for whatever you're selling. From apple pies to cherry pies, you might cut grass or what have you. If you got a convenience store, you know, I'm not saying you had to have 100. Now, you can 100 convenience stores, but the thing about a convenience store is you can have 100 items. You can have 100 items or more in a convenience store. Each one of those items that you sell in the convenience store, you know, it's a profit center. This thing, think about, you know, you got a 7-Eleven or any convenience store. You know, bubblegum's a profit center. Stamps are a profit center. Cigarettes are a profit center. Cigars are a profit center. Sodas, juices, a loaf of bread, a jar of mayonnaise, pantyhose, notebooks. This is an assignment for some of you. The next time you go into a convenience store, 7-Eleven or something like that, you know, neighborhood corner store, you know, take account of how many items that they sell in the store. Or, you know what, ask the store manager how many, you know, tell them you might be interested in starting your own store. How many items are you selling in your store? Going to a dollar store, how many items do they, you know, and with the convenience stores, the dollar stores and all that, I'm sure it's probably well over 100 that they have all stocked in there. So it's not, they're not dependent. Let's get a visual here. I'll use McDonald's first. Imagine if McDonald's, the restaurant. Imagine if McDonald's had only one item on their menu. Let's say a hamburger. Not a cheeseburger, not the Big Mac. But let's just say they had a hamburger on their menu. Nothing to drink with it, no fries, no shakes, no apple pie, just a hamburger. All right. Well, that business model might work. How long it might work, I don't know. But McDonald's, and they've got a, well, because they got a more sophisticated menu as today than they did when they started out. But they, you know, they got hamburgers. Okay, for people that want that, they got cheeseburgers, they got quarter pounders, they got Big Macs, chicken sandwiches. That's five different type of burgers from McDonald's. Five profit centers, five paydays. They're not hurting during this pandemic. Then they got fries. Okay, you want a small fry? That's another payday. You want a large fry? That's another payday. You want something to drink? They got vanilla milkshakes, chocolate milkshakes, and strawberry milk. I think some places have strawberry milkshakes. So we're knocking at the door for what, about 15 paydays, 15 paychecks. Now, the average person that's going to come in there is not going to order all those items at one time. They also have salads. They also have desserts. They got ice cream. They got apple pies. They got cherry pies in some places. Yesterday, I told people to do this assignment. Get you a menu from a Chinese restaurant. Carry out, whatever. I got a bunch of them right here. Matter of fact, I need to go through and count those up. A Chinese food menu, well, I would say probably have at least 100 different items on that menu. You know, they got it, you know, the appetizers, they got a bunch of things on that particular part. You know, poultry, they got a whole bunch of dishes made from that. Pork, they got a whole bunch of, you know, dishes made from that. Seafood, they got a whole bunch of, you know, menus, items based on that. Vegetarian, they have that as well. So, who's calling me? I can't answer the phone because I'm with you guys. So, that's where I'm saying, you know what? They're not hurting for business. The pandemic has not affected them. To my eye, that it has. So I would say structure your household affairs. Because think about it. Some of the people that are struggling right now, okay, let's take your cash flow and compare it to McDonald's. Now, everybody within the sound of my voice more than likely can make a better hamburger than McDonald's. Practically everybody I'm listening to can, no doubt about it, can make it better than McDonald's. Okay. But why is the average McDonald's earning more than you in your household? Well, it's simple arithmetic, people. Let's say you have a paycheck that comes in. Let's say you have a spouse or live-in partner. They have a paycheck coming in. That's two paychecks. Let's say you guys want a little bit more because, you know, it's Christmas time is coming up. So you go out and get an extra job, and then your partner goes out and get an extra job. So you two, between the two people, that's four paychecks coming in. You don't see each other that much, but you got four paychecks coming into that household. Okay. Now, let's switch this over to a McDonald's household business model. Okay, once again, they get paid from burgers they sell, just plain old hamburgers, cheeseburgers, quarter pounders, Big Macs, chicken sandwiches, Let's throw on the breakfast menu egg McMuffin, sausage McMuffin, breakfast burrito, pancake platter. They got a big platter too for breakfast. That's 10 items. That's 10 paychecks. Okay. Let's keep on going. They got salads. Okay. You know, they got garden salads, probably a chicken salad. You know, they got strawberry shakes. They got vanilla shakes. All right, we're up to 15 paychecks, 15 items. They got Coca-Cola. They have Pepsi. If you want to drink something. For dessert, they have apple pie, in some places cherry pie, and in some places ice cream. So that's 20 items on a McDonald's menu, bare minimum. Each represent a paycheck. The average customer that comes in there is not going to order all that stuff. But through people going in and out, everything gets ordered, 20 paychecks. What I'm telling you during this podcast or this live stream, which is titled Leaving Egypt During a Pandemic, and this is the conclusion I had to come through last week when I couldn't talk to you guys at all, is you need to set up your business and model it after a McDonald's. How many items are you going to have, or revenue streams are you going to have to sustain your household? Because we just took, let's look at it now. A couple, two people, that's why a lot of, couples have fights over finances. It's because, man, you do the arithmetic. You got two jobs, he got two jobs, and it's not, you're not cutting it, particularly if, you know, the government says you can't do this, you can't do this during any pandemic or whatever. But if you model what McDonald's does, or Burger King, or whole, it doesn't matter who, could be the dollar store, have a family-based business where you've got revenue centers and you're not depending on just one, two, three, or four streams of income. I would say the bare minimum, just based on what I just said, go to McDonald's. Now, the Chinese carryout places, they have a bigger menu than McDonald's. I would say study the Chinese food menu and study McDonald's menu. But, and once again, each and every item on their menus represents a paycheck. No, a Big Mac is $5 paycheck. You know, a Happy Meal, I don't know what a Happy Meal costs, but whatever a Happy Meal costs, that represents a paycheck. The dollar menu at McDonald's represents a paycheck. But if you got it coming in, and you know what, that's what I'm putting out there, because I'm taking my 100 item goal. That's a goal, but I'm looking at between now and I'm gonna give myself a year on this one. Between now and this time next year, I'll have at least 20 items on my list, on my item list. Still, my goal is still 100, but you know, I'm being kind of conservative. If I do about two a month, add two a month when and they're solid, you can back them up with what you're delivering. People get what they pay for, that type thing. That's how I'm doing it. But for you guys out there, like I say, take a look at a Chinese food menu and just count how many items that they're selling. Each one of those represents a paycheck. Go to McDonald's. You know, none of the items on McDonald's will break the bank. None of the dishes that you can pick up at a Chinese food restaurant or a Mexican restaurant is going to break the bank. Dollar stores are prospering because you can go in there and get something of value for a dollar. Now, some items in the dollar store do cost, well, quite a few items in the dollar store. You got the, dollar store, family dollar, Dollar Tree. Depending on what you go in, some of those, a lot of those stores, items are going to cost more, but you're going to get them less than what you can get them in other places. But the thing is, do that as a little exercise for yourself. Count, what items are at, how many items do they have. It could be anywhere. Pizza Hut, Domino's, McDonald's, Burger King, Wendy's. But I say McDonald's because McDonald's doesn't have a big menu. But compare it to, do you want to have a 20 item? Do you have 20 ways to earn income? Or do you just want to have 2 to 4? Once again, there's a whole bunch of people that they get 4 paychecks coming in the house and they're still struggling. Thing is, let's do the math on that. You have 4 paychecks, but you're spending money 30 days out of the month. You need to counteract that, okay? That's why I would say, look, bare minimum, model what McDonald's does. Okay, that's my spiel on leaving Egypt during the pandemic. Let's see, you guys got any trending topics that you want to put out there? Only thing I can think of, give us a call, 619-768-2945. With the Ahmaud Arbery case out of, I think that's South Carolina or North Carolina. Georgia. It's somewhere in one of those states. Southeast part of the United States. One of the prosecutors, she has been indicted, so she's up on charges case. In that case, the Ahmaud Arbery case, that happened before the George Floyd case, so that's the latest I've heard on that. I haven't heard anything on the George Floyd case because they had 3 more officers that was supposed to go to trial, I thought over the summertime, but now it's September. So if any of you guys know what's happening with that, give us a call, 619-768-2945. Then actor Michael K. Williams, I believe, that's his name. He was on The Wire, played Omar Little in The Wire. He was on Boardwalk Empire and some other work. Very good actor. He was found dead yesterday in his New York City apartment from, it looks like, all we can see is it looks like a potential drug overdose, but the autopsy will probably be performed today and that type thing. So, but if you guys got any other news or trending topics, whatever, give us a call, let us know, share it with us. Meanwhile, what we're going to do is I'm going to put back on Factory City Now we're gonna go to the shoe people because I was talking to somebody right before I started the podcast this morning, and I'm looking at if you really want to get into something, find something to manufacture or find something to make. Find something to make. All right, here's a clip on what they're doing in Ethiopia with shoes, what the Chinese are doing in partnership with Ethiopians, making shoes in Ethiopia that they sell globally.
Thousands of jobs for local people by Chinese investor shoe factory, Huajian Shoe Factory in Ethiopia. Since formal diplomatic ties forged between China and Ethiopia more than four decades ago, the overall relationship and cooperation between the two countries have grown steadily. Ethiopia has taken China as an example for its economic growth and development. In recent years, the partnership and economic cooperation between the two countries have brought about fruitful outcomes in different sectors, particularly in infrastructure and industrial parks development. The Eastern Industry Zone in the town of Dukem, Oromia Regional Estate, just 35 kilometers south of the capital Addis Ababa, is one of the mega projects carried out with the Chinese investment in the development of manufacturing sector in Ethiopia. The once farming town began to see a surge in manufacturing in 2010 when Ethiopia's first industrial park was opened here. The Eastern Industry Zone has housed about 85 factories with the Chinese investments and a shoe factory in the industry zone, that is, Huajian Shoe Factory, has enabled the country to bear fame on the world exporter map for its Made in Ethiopia shoes. I'm on the premises of the Eastern Industry Zone in Dukem Town, 35 kilometers south of Ethiopia's capital, Addis Ababa. This is the gate of Huajian Shoe Factory. Built with Chinese investment, the 40-hectare Eastern Industrial Zone is where Huajian, a Chinese shoemaker producing for brands like Guess, Calvin Klein, Nina, and other branded items, set up its factory in 2011. Huajian Shoe Factory, as the Eastern Industry Zone alone, has created job opportunities for about 2,500 local Ethiopians. This was followed by a second Huajian factory in August 2016 in the firm's own industrial park on the outskirts of the capital, Addis Ababa. You can see the picture of the new Huajian International Light Industry Zone being under construction in Addis Ababa. The Ethiopia-China Huajian International Light Industry City, invested and constructed by Huajian Group, is located in the Labu Lafto district of Addis Ababa, capital of Ethiopia. The functions include such as export processing, trade and service, among others. This integrated industrial park focuses on a light industry and its theme is science and technology, high efficiency, civilization, harmony, and environmental friendly. It is a leading area and a demonstration area among the African industrial parks of China's advanced and advantageous industry developing in Africa through One Belt, One Road strategy. The Huajian Light Industry City, projected with a total investment of $1 billion, covering a total area of 137.8 hectares with a construction area of 1.5 million square meters, is supposed to be completely constructed in 2020. We are now inside the Huajian Shoe Factory, and now I can see that this department, it says research and design, and we have workers operating inside and inside. Here are both male and female workers engaged on their respective duties at this Hojiangshu factory on the premises of the Eastern Industrial Zone. The local workers and the Chinese all work here in harmony and in good spirit. Soon, decorating, segregation, binding, polishing, giving final touch, checking, packing, the different activities carried out here at the different sections and each in its own steps.
This department is now evolving. Now we can see how the decoration is made and processed inside this department. We see the workers are on duty and they are working hard. And we see also that the molds over there, and we see the molds here, and the socks are on duty. I think we see also these shoes are the, I think, on the final stage. So this is one of the departments of the Hojiangshu factory. Also we see the Chinese staff are working along with local staff. As you can see, this is a sewing machine, so workers are on duty, and the Chinese staff and local staff are working together in harmony. Yes, now this female worker also working on this, how to fill this half process to product. And it goes like that. This is the half process to factory. Now the worker is on duty. Now the worker is pairing the shoe which comes from the different sections. Now she is a kind of polishing it and to give to the final touch.
The slogans and messages within the facility of the shoe factory tend to encourage and create friendly and sound working atmosphere and spirit.
This very large working space of Hojiangshu factory, we can see also the slogans that is focused on efficiency, effective work, long-term development and harmonious living are among the slogans in this shoe factory. Now we see the different sections are operating in processing the shoe being manufactured in this Hojiangshu factory on the premises of the Eastern Industry Zone in Jikamtown.
In addition to creating job opportunities, Hojin has enabled hundreds of local employees to get training opportunities towards enhancing their skills and career capabilities in shoe manufacturing sector. Apart from enhancing their skills and current career, the training in China is believed to help local employees be the future managers of Hojin in their home country. To date, Hojin has selected more than 500 Ethiopian employees for a training of 6 months to 2 years in China. Wendu Sanabara is one of the local employees who have had training opportunities in China.
My name is Wendu Sanabara. My experience is I am already working in Hojin more than 6 years. I am working in Hojin is around 2011, starting Hojin. 2013, 2014, I am go to China for 2 year training. After that, come back to here. My position is now already. I'm production assistant, production manager assistant. Now my company is already making female shoes, export for American market. Now my company is already more than 2,500 workers in here.
We see here the final product of the shoe produced, manufactured here in Huajin Shoe Factory of the Eastern Industry Zone. I see here the female worker is on duty of putting the shoes and finalize the package. Yeah, this is a worker in duty of finalizing the final stage of the shoe products, and they are packing. And can you tell us what are you doing here in the final stage?
Yes, ma. Every day before.
Yeah, this is will be exported to foreign market. Yeah, this is the final stage of the shoe factory. Yeah, okay. It says that made in Ethiopia, the shoe produced locally here in Ethiopia by Ethiopians in the Huajin shoe factory of the Chinese. These are the package of the final product of Huajin shoe factory. It says made in Ethiopia. Once the shoe products are produced, finalized and packaged, they will be loaded on these trucks and it will be exported to foreign markets.
Following China's experience, Ethiopia now plans to increase the number of its industrial parks to 15 by June 2018 as part of its effort to boost manufacturing and export. Within the framework of the Belt and Road Initiative, China has also built and financed a $4.2 billion Ethiopia-Djibouti electrified rail line to boost Ethiopia's industrial exports. For the Huajin case, it is an integration of China's technic advantage with Ethiopia's low-cost production advantage, achieving win-win cooperation.
Now we are leaving this room, which is a model of this project, that is Ethiopia-China Huajin International Light Industry Zone, which is underway in Labu, Ethiopia's capital, Addis Ababa.
Okay, today's podcast titled Leaving Egypt During the Pandemic. They're doing some very interesting things all over Africa, but I know in Kenya, matter of fact, I probably get my best business ideas by what I title watching videos on YouTube, what I call African innovation, where people of actually Chinese partnering with the Chinese, or not even partnering with the Chinese or people in different Asian countries. What I've noticed in Africa is that some of the entrepreneurs in different parts of Africa, and I'm thinking about one right now in Kenya, where the lady was unemployed, and she taught herself how to become a carpenter by making furniture out of pallets. Now she's got employees under her and makes some beautiful furniture out of pallet wood. Kenya, it has some type of, you can't harvest any trees now for whatever reason, because they don't want to deforest it like what has happened in Haiti. But she's got her own factory. She makes things. She got herself out of poverty by taking something that people cast off, pallets, and now she's got employees. And I think that's the way a lot of people need to look at this pandemic. Find something. Now, this might not be the only cookie cutter. It might not be the silver bullet for many people, but for a lot of people, I think it will be. Find something. Like I said, the one lady I'm thinking about, she didn't even know anything about carpentry. She had to teach herself on those, making chairs and beds. She had to teach herself the craft by trial and error. But it was good enough where she was able to take something imperfect and sell it, and then she kept on getting more customers and getting better and better, and now she's got employees. You know, so if you know how to bake pies, cakes, cook a great meatloaf dinner, know how to sew, or would like to learn how to sew, or open up a store. Now, because I typically give you guys like the clean and unsanitized version of this, because I know of a person over in Asia that had a little neighborhood convenience store that had several items in it. She probably had about 50 to 100 items, but she went out of business. Now, here's the caveat with that now. In many parts of Asia, you might have 3-4 convenience stores in the same neighborhood, same block. It's just like you go into certain urban cities here in the United States, you know, there might be 2 hair salons or 2 barber shops on the same block. And if you don't like any services that are in this particular hair salon or barber shop, you go across the street, or if you don't like either one of their services, then, you know, you go to the next block or 2 blocks over. Same with churches. You take a place like Chicago, they're probably at least, I'm going to be real conservative, they're probably at least 500 predominantly black churches in Chicago, Illinois. At least. I'm not even going to go into other ethnic groups. So if you don't like Pastor so-and-so, or you can't get into the choir at this particular church, walk a few blocks down to the corner, there's another church. Or go around the corner, there's another church. You know, you got 500 options. And that's a very conservative number for a city the size of Chicago. Very conservative number. But so, yeah, this one friend of mine, she had a convenience store, but there were a lot of other stores, people, her neighbors, they also had stores. So it was saturated. So you want to set up shop, place that's not saturated, or you want to start a business where it's not saturated. You know, Jeff Bezos, basically, a big part of his success is there really isn't a whole lot of e-commerce companies that can deliver what he's delivered. That's really the nuts and bolts of it. There's, you know, eBay. You know, eBay, I mean, there are other sites like eBay, but, you know, eBay really doesn't have any competition. So, yeah, get into something that, you know, you really don't have to worry about a lot of competition. And look at those sources of income. And it's only limited to your imagination what you can do with it. Let's go to phone lines here. Area code 410. Your mic is open.
Hey, brother LA, how you doing?
I can't complain. I have no complaints, none at all.
Where's the usual cast of characters that usually come on every day?
We got a few here. Not everybody, but we had a few.
Oh, the only reason I called was because I didn't think you had anybody on the line today. I'm getting ready to start my
Well, there's people all the time. There's a lot of people don't press one, and, you know, so if they don't press one, I don't go, you know, punch them up.
Yeah. Brother L.A., you know my story.
What's that now?
I say, you know my story, how I got started in business. I was raised in business.
Right.
And
let me ask you this question. Now, you set up a store for your wife when you are in Baltimore. How many items, just ballpark, did she carry in her store?
Oh, God, I can't count them. I carried all of the lines of canned food.
Okay. What you said was over 100 or 200 or what?
Oh, yeah, it was over 200. Shit.
Okay.
Way over 200.
Right.
It was a small-time corner store in Baltimore.
Right.
Just like the Koreans have, ever what have you. And we carried things like if you didn't pick up the items at the grocery store, instead of you going back out of the community to a grocery store, you could get them there as a matter of like a convenience. Had the usual, you know, candies and cookies and ice cream and sodas and stuff like that. We had the lottery machine, which, you know.
Okay. You had the basics. That's good.
Yeah, I had the basics. So as far as
they might come in to buy a lottery ticket and buy a loaf of bread also.
Or milk or ever what have you, yeah. Yeah, that's the way we planned it. But, you know, what you're talking about, my father got pissed off because he got some bad treatment at our store.
Mm-hmm.
And he came home and said, you know what, I'm going to put up a store. My mother thought it was crazy. He went out there and laid it out. And my father was a jack of all trades. He was a carpenter. He was a welder, a certified welder, and a certified plumber. And he laid out the store.
And that means he always had work. He always had work then.
Oh, well, he had more than he could handle, really, because.
Right. And
you know
that's
what happened.
Something, Beasley, that's something that I know when I was coming up. A lot of, you know, they were pushing to go to college. But our parents' generation, you know, they had those solid tools like carpentry, plumbing. You really don't even have to advertise with those two businesses. It's word of mouth. You just do a handful of jobs good, and you can make a career out of that.
Well, my father got the most business. If anybody had a problem, once he got started on that job, a neighbor will always come over and say, well, look, I've been having a problem with some plumbing here, and I was wondering if you could take a look at it. Sometimes we go weeks in one area just doing work at different houses off of that one house. But getting back to your subject, father got pissed off because he got bad service at a white grocery store back in the day, back in the 60s.
Okay. All right.
And he says, shit, I'm going to put up a store myself. So my mother thought it was crazy. So all of us got out there and, you know, we tore at the boards and all of that stuff. And he put it up. And look, my father and mother worked during the day.
All right.
And they trained my brother and I how to count money. And we ran the store during the day. And we made sure we put the orders into the wholesalers.
Okay.
If he didn't go and pick it up. And I don't know if it happened anywhere else, but actually we were a 24-hour store before they were 24 hours because what would happen is if we locked up, somebody would always come after we locked up and wanted something, or a child was sick, or at that time people were burning kerosene in the area if it got cold. And also we sold coal and wood too. And well, he tried to because, you know, we felt like whatever it was that the community needed, we could make a buck off of it. So
right.
If they needed a bag of coal or something like that, we'd get up and we'd load it up in the car or on the truck, and it could be 12 or 1 o'clock at night. But what happened is, I didn't know it at the time, but I actually learned how to put up a store,
mm-hmm.
stock a store, and go in business and get my EIN numbers and all of that stuff. So when I moved to Maryland, my wife didn't have anything to do. I went mm-hmm. ahead on and put up a store to get her off her butt. But
okay.
before I did that, I always did my market research. And if anybody wants to know how to simply go in business, all you got to do is go to a flea market. That's the purest form of marketing in the world, because everybody's trying to sell something, and it doesn't take a lot of money to go and get your products. And there used to be a book that they passed out at the flea markets, and it told you where to go in and get cheap items.
Okay.
You need little templates and things like that.
Uh-huh.
And what happened is I was working. Before I went into the store business, I used to do flea markets. And I got a chance to get some goodies tapes for $2. And I could sell them for $7,
mm-hmm.
along with the Black History books and all of that stuff. And I really did pretty darn good. Sometimes I make just as much at that flea market as I made on my paycheck, you know. But
okay. Now,
all you
got to
do.
Let me ask you this, Busy, about flea markets. What if you're in an area that, like some of these towns I've been, you know, like these little black towns I've been in, they have no flea markets at all. What about how about setting up a flea market in a place like that?
Well, a lot of these people around here do that. They
okay.
just get out in the yard, they order this stuff. But, you know, you can go to the flea market really and get a booklet that gives you all of these items that you can buy real cheap at wholesale, or you can go into the different wholesale houses and get things to make it convenient for people.
Right.
Not as much as you used to, because, you know, Walmart and these dollar stores have knocked out a lot of the flea markets. But the thing is, all you do is, all you got to do is look at the drug dealers. I mean, the drug dealers have the product. And they come up and they stake out their little territory and everything, and they do pretty good off the streets. But like you said before, if you got a talent for cooking or you got a talent for just whatever you got a talent in, yeah, you can make some money right in your yard down here, because like you said before, there's no regulations here. I can sit
right.
out in the yard if I wanted to and make money. But the thing is,
yeah,
this is the most
right.
longest period of time that I've been inactive in a business in a long time. But basically what you do in L.A., you're preaching in a forest. You're a lone voice in a forest with nobody around, because we have been so brainwashed and so brain dead until we have opportunity right around us and we don't see it. Look, if there's a food dozen in our area,
mm-hmm.
then logic says that, hey, people need food, and I can go in and put up something as far as a store is concerned. Now,
right.
I'm to the point where I don't want to do business, because business consumes too much of my time. I'm doing other stuff. But, hell, I mean, when you're in business, it looks easy. But, Brother L.A., you're consumed with that business 7 days a week.
It takes 24
hours a day.
It takes
and
time.
Most people are not geared for that. But
yeah,
like you said before, if you could get a group of people together to be investors, and basically that's what happens with all these other ethnic groups. You can call it whatever you want to. The way they do it is, if somebody is interested in doing something, they will finance it. Whereas you
mm-hmm.
can't get us to finance anything but something negative. And that's our problem. And I was listening to your podcast yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
And I hope you go back and listen to some of the comments, because they're very interesting once you get offline and you listen to people's opinions. But, Brother L.A., we have been so brain dead and so conditioned to being oppressed until we don't want to do anything outside of what our masters, and I say our masters because we're still slaves, regardless of whether you want to believe it or not. If the white man don't grace it, we don't do it. And that's bad because...
Well, speaking of businesses, I guess this is services. Add more onto it if you can see more. The thing that you can get on, now this is on a critical mass basis, that black people will pitch in their hat and put money together. Well, we can put together a church. We'll do that. We'll do a barbershop, and we'll do a hair salon. Now, those are three things we can do. We do on a regular. Anything past that you can think of? Now, restaurants, I don't know.
Yeah, you can do restaurants. And look,
okay,
Brother L.A., think about what you just said. If you look, all you need if you want to start a church is an empty space and what do you call the thing that the pastor stands behind?
A podium. Pulpit.
A podium. That's all you need in the book. And look, you ain't got to have no money to start. All you got to do is say God told you to tell you.
You know what, Beasley? I never thought about it that way. You're absolutely right. You don't need a penny to start a church.
Don't need a penny. All you need is to say, God told me to tell you.
And we're going to have a meeting in my living room. You're right. You don't need a penny. Okay.
Not a penny.
Not a penny.
And look, here's the other thing. You can stand out on the street corner, put your head down on the street and say, look, I want to read to you such and such and such, and if you feel like it, donate such and such and such. And you're off and running, and that's the way it is. Now, cosmetologists and barbershops.
Now, you need a little bit for equipment.
Huh?
You just need a little bit for, you know, scissors, combs, you know, relaxers for the ladies or whoever you... But you don't need a whole lot of money for that, though.
Yeah, because most of the barbers that I knew back in the day, they started out in the house or either going around to different people's houses or everywhere they could set up at and put some clippers. But now when you come
to
restaurants and when you come to grocery stores, it takes a little more planning. You got to deal with the authorities as far as getting your license.
Your health permit.
Then you
got
to figure out what you're going to put in there, set it up, and all of this.
Right.
And it takes a little more thought, and that's what gets our people. Because the thing is, things you mentioned is simple. Hey, look, all I got to do is just give me some curlers and a hot comb or even some hair straightening, and I'm off and running. But it takes a little more thought. And it takes a little more money because in a restaurant, you got to deal with the health officials. You got to make sure that you have the proper equipment and all of this stuff. And
that's true.
It takes a lot of money to do it. A lot of people can cook just as good as anybody else. But once you go in and look at the regulations you got to follow and everything else, then it takes a little more thought. But I do have to
say, absolutely right. To open up a restaurant takes considerably more thought. And it is regulated. Not heavily regulated, but it is regulated. And with a barbershop, hair salon, or a church, particularly a church, that's got to be the easiest thing to start up.
Oh, hell yeah. And that's why I say, you know, if you want to start off in business, now flea markets are not as popular as they used to be.
Mm-hmm.
But you go out there and set your table up. You pay the man $25 a day or either $50 a day, and you put your stuff on the table.
Right.
And look, you build clientele that way. Now, even when I had the store, I'd go out to Patapsco Flea Market in Maryland and set up some of my wares just to attract people to my street because they say, well, look, do you do this during the week? And I give them my address and I draw customers that way. But if you really want to get started, you go to a flea market.
Do they still have the Do they still have the Black Expo out there? That was like a big a flea market, but they like had it on a circuit. It went from city to city.
I went to the Black Expo there in D.C., right across the street from RFK Stadium one year. But I haven't, while I was there, I never saw it.
Anything about them for years.
Now they did have a flea market.
You know what? The Amish do that. The Amish do flea markets.
Yeah. And look, if you can can something or, you know, like I said before, now a lady used to go out to the Patapsco flea market based on what you were saying.
Right.
And all of the merchants had to get there at least 5 or 6 o'clock in the morning to make sure they got a good spot. And she make a bunch of sandwiches. And the thing is, that lady made the sandwiches at her house.
Okay.
And the thing is, she come out there and sell to the merchants and buy the...
Bailey, you going in and out?
Nope. Yeah, and look, we look forward to seeing it because, hey, she made a hell of a sandwich, you know?
Now,
but
that's
what the Latino women
are doing right now. They'll make those sandwiches or make meals at home, pull up to a Home Depot or Lowe's. I'm thinking in D.C. right now. They probably do it all over the country. And they pull up and they sell those sandwiches and meals to, you know, the dudes working for the, you know, looking for day labor.
Yeah. But L.A., look, business... Going in business is not hard at all. The key thing is making sure you can manage it properly and you put it in a good spot and you have a group of financiers. And when I say that, look, you can't take it. We're so brainwashed until a minister sits dollars corporation for. But you know what? All he's interested in is going to heaven. And getting his for he or her and their family. And they're not looking at the
big most churches are family-based businesses. The Potter's House with T.J. Jakes, family-based business. The Faith Crenshaw Christian Center out in L.A. With the late Fred Price and his wife started there. Betty's still living. Family-based business.
I told you this the other day. It may not have gone.
Beasley, your phone's going in and out. All right, Beasley, I'm going to leave your mic open because he might be, I don't, you know, your call's going in and out. Wait a minute. All right, Beasley, your mic's still open. 425, your mic is open.
Family-based businesses that don't cost anything, free to start. So when I was homeless, I couldn't get a job. No one even would hire me. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And then I didn't have money to start a job, to start a business, to do anything. I couldn't do anything but help.
Okay.
The greatest accomplishments that I've achieved in my life have come out of my ability to help. And I've been able to take that and translate that into a business, helping. Okay?
And you do an excellent job at that.
And that doesn't cost anything, helping. Right, you can go get yourself an EIN number, register yourself as a business, right?
Mm-hmm.
Right? And
yeah.
Then assist and help people. Basically, you're a producer. But people call you, they tell you what they need, what they're going through, like you do with me. And then you go, okay, and you give a solution, you research or whatever, and you help. And that doesn't cost a dime. And they can't ever regulate that or touch that, okay? You don't have to have no no accreditation, no college degree, no experience helping. Yes.
Well, you got a lot of experience helping.
Yeah.
And that was an excellent, I listened to that whole show last night, Hilltop.
Oh, thank you, the Hilltop Radio
Man,
show.
That was a real, you know, it's been a long time since I've heard, matter of fact, I need to start listening to Blog Talk more at night. But that was a real quality program on last night. So they're on what nights of the week?
We're on Sunday night through Thursday at 9 p.m., 9 to 11 Eastern Standard Time. And Friday night, the Vibes Live Exclusives is on the same channel, same number, at 8 p.m. Eastern Standard. Mm-hmm.
Okay, well, I'm going to stay up more at night because I was learning. I said, wait a minute. Because his board was, like, filled up. You can tell it was filled up.
Yes.
And there was a lot of I mean, it's not so much the content. It's like it was very interactive. Very interactive.
Yeah.
Thanks. So we'll get him on here. We'll get him on here. Anytime you set it up in there, on here automatically. All right, hold on, Robin. But you're right, Robin. Just by helping, and that doesn't cost you any money. 410 Beasley, you're back on. Beasley, you're back on. Your mic's back open. Beasley. Okay, now he's got some. All right, Beasley.
Oh, so before I was cut off. I was saying, where are all of these links, these Greek organizations at, that has all of the knowledge, all of the money, and the X to do business in our neighborhood? Because now look, they got the money, they got the education, and they got the connections all over the world. So now, we can't blame ordinary ghetto people for not doing stuff. But for the most talented among us, supposedly, Where the hell are they? Because the thing is, Brother Ellie, instead of them stomping the yards, they can put up businesses in our neighborhoods. And they got
That's
the money
true.
To do it. And look, they have the communication skills and the social capital along with the financial capital to do what you're exactly talking about. So
you're right. Well, yeah, Robin and I last week on my downtime, not hers, I think one thing we uncovered was, like, the number of neighborhoods that are in the United States that don't have any kind of communication system.
Yeah, but these people are experts.
But you're right about the Greek organizations.
I'll get back to you. I'm in the middle of something here. I'll get back to you.
Okay, all right. Robin, were you on when Beasley mentioned, and you already know this, to start a church, you don't need a penny to start a church.
No, you don't.
You probably need something to build the church, but not to start.
Hello?
Wait a minute.
Is the main character in Americana based on you to any
Hello?
Great extent?
Where the hell
me?
Is that?
Maybe not.
That's you.
I think one of the wonderful things about doing things of this sort after writing fiction is I mean, there's a lot that's unconscious. There's a lot that's...
No,
I'm not playing back anything.
Wait a minute, Robin. That was me.
Okay.
I accidentally clicked one of the audio clips. And I didn't realize I did. Then I looked up. Oh, wait a minute. It was me. It wasn't you. Okay. But anyway, continue on, Robin.
There was one lady, I used to walk by her when I was homeless. She'd be in her yard, sitting on the lawn, weeding, sweeping, you know, just doing something in her yard.
Right.
And I would walk past her on my daily quest to find something to eat, wash myself, go to the bathroom, sleep, blah, blah. And so I started asking her, hey, can I help you? And she said, no. Right? And she was really rude and really mean to me. But I kept asking her, hey, is there anything I can do for you? You know, no, leave me alone, right? Well, one day I just didn't ask her. She was out and she was sitting down there weeding, and I just sat down next to her and started pulling up weeds. And she looked at me and she says, I can't pay you. I go, I don't want anything. I was looking for something constructive to do and safe.
To do, okay.
To pass the time. You know, because I was facing imminent death, murder, rape, robbery, you know, so I'm trying to do something mundane, you know.
Right.
So after a couple of times of doing that, one day she gives me a sandwich. Okay. Then another time she gave me like 10, 15 bucks. Right?
Okay.
Now, she didn't do it all the time, but every so once in a while. But the time that she gave me that cash and that food, I realized I just created a job for myself by helping.
You sure did.
Okay? Just by helping.
You know, this podcast right today, I'm considering it, for me at least, a breakthrough based on what you just said and what Beasley said earlier. The starting of a church, you don't need a penny. And what you also said, and what a lot of churches do is they help.
Yeah.
That's it. Help can come in many different forms. It could be listening to somebody. That could be it. Pulling weeds, driving somebody to an appointment, whatever it might be, but do something.
And here's a real good
one. And keep on doing it.
So here's a real good one. You're sitting there in church. There's one of the mothers, her husband just died. She's got a 4-bedroom house and a yard, and all of her husband's tool and equipment, and her lawn needs mowing, and, you know, she's a bit disabled, so she needs some help. So in that same church, there's a family that's homeless. So now they can go and move in with that lady, and she can pay them, or that could be their room and board, for her. In exchange for them staying there, they could be caregivers, mow the lawn, do maintenance. Oh, and guess what? That same equipment, right?
Right.
For mowing the lawn, you can take that family, that man of the family can take, and he can go do lawns, other lawns.
Right, exactly.
And start a business, okay?
Right.
And start a business. Now he can sustain both of those households if he wanted to, okay?
True, right.
Just being someone. That lady says, well, you know, I can't pay you, but I can help you out by letting you stay. And then they get over there and they go, oh, my God, mother, you've got a sewing machine, and I know how to sew. Let's start a sewing circle. Let's make quilts and let's sell them. oh my God, you got, you know, blah blah. Does that make sense?
I'm having a breakthrough. Like I said, with between you and Beasley, I'm having a major breakthrough because I was
You've got all these tools and all these equipment. See, a lot of people will go, oh, well, he's gone now. You need to clear it out. You need to sell it. You need to. No, don't sell it. Repurpose it. Utilize it over and over again and get residual income.
It all starts by helping somebody.
Yeah. Yep.
Man, I never thought about it. I already knew that most churches are family-based businesses, but it literally doesn't cost a penny. Just most churches start basically in somebody's living room.
Well, that's where the churches started. Jesus and the disciples, and after Jesus, the disciples, Mark, Matthew, Luke, John, all of them, they walked and from city to city.
Right.
And they gathered. They went from house to house. There wasn't church. Okay? They'll tell you.
They didn't have
church.
A sanctuary.
No,
right.
Jesus did not go to the church. Jesus went to the temple and studied the scrolls. You understand?
Right.
He went to the temple, which is a whole other thing. So don't get it twisted, people.
But he didn't. Him and the 12 disciples didn't have a physical place, temple, so to speak, a sanctuary. They moved about. They were mobile. But it didn't cost him a penny, or whatever the currency was of the day back then. Beasley.
Oh, look, you know what? I enjoy listening to Robin because Robin really gives it to you straight out, and she doesn't get too far out there, but. The trick is this, Brother Ellie. I was talking to you about the Lynx, the Greeks, and all of these people stomping the yard. They have the social capital. They have the money. And the thing is, they're managing white folks as corporations. And the thing is, they're worse than the darn church. Now, I can't give the church a pass, but I can't give the Lynx a pass. Nowhere in the world can I give somebody that is very knowledgeable and very educated in how things are supposed to go as far as setting up businesses for white folks, but they can't do it in our neighborhood, which leads me back to this. When you're brainwashed and you've been taught to be a slave, see, you can be a slave in the most opulent surroundings and not see the forest for the trees, because my thing would be, hey, look, if I got all of this knowledge and I can do it for white folks, why can't I can't do it for black folks?
Now, you
not
know what? You're absolutely right, Beasley, because if you take D.C., shit, any city, but you're right, the number of Greek organizations, because right now we're working for IBM, we're working for Mobile Exxon, we're running cities. You know, look how many black mayors we got. We got quite a few black mayors now.
Yeah, but I don't even go there. I'm just talking about the people that's in corporate, that is managing corporate finances and everything else, but they can't do something for the people. And look, it goes right back to what I've been telling you, identity, and it goes back to self-preservation and survival of the fittest. See, we haven't been taught that. We have been taught to serve every master, whether it's a Korean or Chinese or a white boy or Arab. And the thing is, what gets me about them is, they'll sit back and criticize the poorest of us and not lend any assistance at all. And look, some of those Greeks are preachers too now. So with that being the case, I mean, I can give the church a slight pass, but I swear I can't give these Greeks a damn pass. And here's the other thing. They're connected to colleges and universities, And some of them are teachers. They could come out with a program to teach people.
That's
what you're
true.
Talking
there,
about.
There are plenty of HBCU business professors out there.
Yeah.
But for, you're
yeah,
right,
no,
for some reason. Well, hold on. Let's go back to this thing of identity. What identity do you suggest? Because some people, you know, in the religious circles, all right, they might identify as AME, AME, Zion, Catholic, Baptist. They do it that way. Latinos, they identify under language.
Look.
What are your suggestions for black folks, African-Americans?
Brother L.A., I told you one time before, and look, Jesus said if you go to a house and they don't receive your message, brush the dust off your sandals and move on. And I said
right.
that to say this. You're not going to get everybody,
well,
nor do you
that.
Want everybody.
And
the trick is this. Most of these preachers belong to conferences and associations and jurisdictions as far as the COGIC is concerned.
True.
And a lot of these churches are interconnected. So with that being the case, they have a unique identity or a specialized identity. But the thing that covers
mm-hmm.
all of it, Brother L.A., is your race. See, nothing should supersede your race. I don't
mm-hmm.
give a damn what kind of religion a white boy has. His race is his most important issue.
Identity.
He wants
okay.
to make sure that hey, look, he's in a superior position regardless of what station he's in. And the same
mm-hmm.
thing with Arabs. You got Shia, you got Shiites, and look.
Right.
Over in the Middle East, they can't stand one another. But when they come over here, they get together. All you got to do is look at Detroit. And the other
oh,
thing
yeah.
is Hispanics, they come from different parts of the Caribbean, everywhere they come from. But when it comes
right.
to important issues, they organize under their language. And look at what the Asians did, the AAPI, Asian American Pacific Islanders. Those people don't have a whole hell of a lot in common, but when they started getting attacked, they came together and formed organizations to deal with the oppression they were going under. So my thing
right.
is this here. The white boy has destroyed our memory and destroyed our thinking to the point that we can't even organize under what God created us in, and that's a black skin. But I say this, Brother L.A., and I want your boy out there to hear it. You know what?
Mm.
The thing is, we got to leave some people behind. And the trick is this. If you don't want to go along, we ain't begging. Stay where the hell you are. But for those black folks that want to move forward, you identify as a black person. That covers everything. That covers your religion. That covers your education. That
mm.
covers your politics and everything else. See, white folks, whether they're conservative or liberals, their one issue is to make sure that white folks are dominant in anything they do. And they'll get together on occasion. You can look at history and see that they got together on certain things to keep the slave in check, whether they were Democrats or Republicans. So
I'm just thinking about
Nat
Turner.
Yeah, and look, what about the compromise, the Tilden-Rutherford compromise? Where the Republicans and Democrats got together to pull the troops out of the South that ushered in terrorism all over the South and had our black folks lynched and everything else. I mean, all you got to do is look at your history. But see, we get wrapped up into the separatism thing. I'm a conservative and you're a liberal. Either I'm a COGIC, Church of God in Christ, and you're AMEZ, African Methodist,
right.
Methodist Episcopal. Or either look, I'm a Greek, and you're just a pro class. I don't mingle with you because I'm Sedity, and that's the foolishness that we got wrapped up in. And
yeah,
to be-
you just made me think about the AKAs.
yeah,
but
yeah,
hmm,
or any of them.
Yeah,
I got
right.
a dozen. You know, they feel like they're better than the average black person. you know, under that little,
yeah,
you call
right.
it, under
some, some of these people that join up with these Greek organizations, they put themselves up on the pedestal. Not all of them, but some, there's enough of them that do.
I'm not talking against that, because you're supposed to think that way. But when it gets in the way of you serving your people, look, they can make a hell of a profit. They're making profits for white folks. Look, they could make a whole lot of money for their organizations if they just come in there and put up a grocery store and a food desert. They got the expertise and the talent, but the thing is, they're just like creatures. They're just looking at the selfish part and not individual part, and not looking at the group part. And that's where we fail at, because Claude Anderson said it. It's a group thing that gets over on everybody else, and individuals can't thrive if the group ain't thriving. And I get off and let you get back to your conversation.
Okay. All right. Let's take the next caller here at 3:14. Your mic is open.
Ellie, I was just listening.
Oh, I thought you had your hand up.
You know, to protect you from a bunch of nonsense, but it seemed like you handled it pretty well when you say, okay, okay. That's the best way to go about doing that.
Well, how are you today?
I'm doing fine.
Are you
like
still in Louisiana
market,
or you're back in St. Louis, Missouri?
I'm here in Louisiana.
Okay, everything's where you are at full power again?
Absolutely.
That's it.
The state having some bad, having some problems. But I think I emailed you some information on from Black Demographics, which is very interesting. And it talks about pointing out the education and jobs areas of African Americans.
Mm-hmm.
Did you pay attention to that?
No, I haven't read that yet. I haven't gone to that account yet.
See, you don't have to worry about me sending you anything about slavery and all that ignorant mess. I try
to. You never do.
Point out things about
well,
education,
I like numbers
in particular. Oh yeah, they good.
Yeah,
you know,
I
you look
love
at and see the big problem I think within this area is education, because when you look at things like the mathematics scores,
mm-hmm.
blacks are on the bottom of Hispanics, whites, and of course Asians. And that's funny that, like I always mentioned, about my one of my favorite groups, Nigerians on top of all of them, and they black. And
yeah, Ethiopians are doing well as also, and
yeah, wonder how that is. And I'm talking about the ones that's born here, and the ones that's born here don't identify themselves as black. They go on and do what they got to do. You look at the math teachers and those that major in math.
Mm-hmm.
You have more black teachers majoring. Well, you have more black teachers in schools that's less than 20% black that major in math, almost 76%, where with schools that's 50% black or more, you got a whole lot less, like 56%. You know what's
right.
That's telling you? That's talking about frustration. The only reason that you would have more black English teachers in schools that's less than 10% black, like on this chart is showing it's 82%, and 68% of those certified. But when you go to these schools that's more than 50% black, less of these black teachers participate there. And I think that's because they are showing frustration.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, because I know when I was in the school system, man, that was frustrating. Not enough.
Then when you look at the professions, which really tells a story, I like looking. Well, see, I had to look at numbers. And you got black-owned businesses with employees. You got blacks that's got more businesses than employees. I don't know how the hell that happened. Can you explain that to me?
You're right. That's an interesting stat. Yeah, and you know what? I wouldn't even. Can you really call those real businesses?
Well, yeah. They have listed themselves as a business.
They have listed themselves as a business, but if they don't, but they are the business. So,
well, yeah.
Like,
how
I
is it that
you,
they
you
have...
Know, let's say you got a business called Pianchi's Drywall. And Pianchi is the sole drywaller. So if Pianchi doesn't work, there is no business. Whereas if Pianchi starts Pianchi's drywalling and then he subs out the work or has employees, you know, that business isn't dependent upon Pianchi physically being at the job site. Yeah, but the stat you're talking about, most black businesses list themselves as a business, but they don't have any employees other than themselves. I mean, should self-employed be considered the same as a business?
Well, if you look at it is. It's how you go about establishing it. Like Robin tell you to go out and get the EIN number. I guess
right.
That's what they do. It's very simple to start a business.
Yeah.
I've had businesses in states like Nevada in particular because
but
they
you
don't
have
charge.
What I would, all right, you have what I, now this is just me. You have what I would call a real business. Okay, because you physically didn't have to be there. You had the jobs, the systems that you had set up, and I don't know your business, but the systems, the teeny tiny little bit I know, it's you had people were doing things. I'm sure you probably had an office person. You know, you had people that did specific jobs, and you made sure everything ran as CEO.
Oh yeah, they were putting up buildings.
Right.
And the people that worked on that,
and you're
didn't
not
going to
put up the kind of massive buildings that you did, the kind of massive buildings that you put up, including the bridges and all that. You don't do that as an individual solo person.
No, but it was a lot of fun, especially when we was doing it. A lot of fun.
Well, I imagine you organized a team or whatever. I mean, how many people did you have under you? Well, it depended on the job. Depended on the job, but
I ran 50. Even at the slowest peak, I used to have 50 employees. Sometimes my payroll was $250,000 a week.
That's a real business, right? That's a real business.
Yeah, but nobody asked me anything. They don't listen. They come up with these. Selling a loaf of bread and a can of camel soup.
Yeah,
hey, why are you going to sell camel soup? Hell, the damn churches give it away.
Of course.
That's like Eric Gardner, ain't it?
Oh, yeah. That's
Eric Gardner.
Pack of cigarette dude, yeah.
He out there on the sidewalk selling cigarettes where people can go in the Korean store and buy a whole pack. Street vendors are selling T-shirts, socks, and other mess where they could go in the store and buy it. So you selling camel soup and bread, people go to the daggone church and get it for free.
That's a shame about Eric Gardner.
Well, yeah, he should have complied. He'd be
no,
lying
yeah, no, I'm not doubting that whatsoever. I agree with you 100%. I'm looking at, like you said, people can go in the store. And it's because I've been thinking about a year ago, I was coming out of someplace. Some guy was rolling down the shopping center with They were selling, what do you call it? They were selling steaks and all that.
It's like these
I'm not going to buy no steaks for you in this damn July outside.
What do you say, steaks?
It, you know, you have a little, not
the
even
freezes
one
on
of
the back
those,
of a truck.
No, no, man. This, he was in one of these two-wheel things that you put your groceries in. And you're selling
what?
Meat. It's the summertime in Florida, and you're selling meat in a parking lot. No.
Well, I've seen people do that with a freezer in the back pickup. See, I don't concern about
well, he didn't even
stuff
have
like
that.
That. Them type of activities. Grocery stores and supermarkets are different than grocery stores. Nobody has no grocery stores no more. Heck, they go to the gas station. And the gas station is selling everything you're going to sell at the grocery store. Did I have a Mr. Moody on your program one day who had
the grocery,
grocery
store?
Store
man? Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. He told you about that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That stuff don't make no money. People go to Walmart. Walmart's got everything in there from eyeglasses, automobile repair, do your taxes.
Clothing items to groceries.
Absolutely. You cannot compete with that. Heck, they even trying to get into some African countries. And the countries are trying to fight them off.
And you can even do banking there.
Absolutely.
Walmart's got a couple.
So all them opportunities, and blacks been doing business forever. Heck, there's records of blacks doing history of black businesses in America that go back, like we say, to the 1600s. You know, reading some of the excerpts of conversation with those business people, they were complaining about the same thing then, too. They say blacks don't support our business.
Mm-hmm.
That's exactly mm-hmm. what they wrote. They said blacks don't support our business like you would think they would. Hell, George Washington and his lieutenants used to dine in a black restaurant. Blacks wouldn't dine in there. And then again, you had some that would. You got the black families where the families come to the dinner table and sit and eat and discuss. They got the mother and the father, and maybe even the grandparents staying in the same household.
Mm-hmm.
That goes on today.
Right.
And they live in your Columbia Heights in Brooklyn, where the average house apartment is selling for $10 million. You got blacks that live like that. And they don't associate with them Jesse Jacksons and that, because what they are proposing is detrimental to them. Heck, if I wanted to leave $10 million or $15 or $20 to my child, why should I have to pay taxes on it? And it's just been sitting in a bank account where the interest it earned was taxed.
Right. Yeah, you're right.
So the Democratic politicians is lethal. I was reading an article today where you got Lyft, the call ride, Uber, American mm-hmm. Airlines is making announcements that they displeasure with Texas laws on guns and its most recent law that is passed that the governor signed on abortion. That ain't none of your business, Lyft and Uber. See, here's the thing, and I'm going to tell you about your cousins. If they can bitch and moan, talk about U.S. when they talk about corporations going into other countries mm-hmm. and interfering with the people, well, why don't you argue the same point about what I just got through mentioning? Uber and Lyft as most recently, and American Airlines. The Major League Baseball as most recently moving to All-Star from Atlanta to, Arizona or Colorado?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Why come they don't complain about that?
Don't know.
The people of a state has the exclusive right given to it by that which permits it to form. That's the U.S. Constitution. That's a state matter. That state is sovereign. That state doesn't come under the dictum as a we and group. Of course, sometimes they say it. But that's a sovereign state. If you don't like what's going on in that state, then guess what? Go someplace else.
Go to another one. Well, yeah, that's my argument when it comes to people that don't like Jeff Bezos. If you don't like Amazon, you got over 20 million other companies that you can go to.
Yeah, absolutely.
Or start your own.
I don't like Missouri got some great gun laws. Even better so than Louisiana. Louisiana tried their legislature, but these idiots, I ain't saying they're idiots, but they voted for a Democratic governor, Bill Edwards. What's his name? Bell. Research Bell and see how far back it goes. You don't have to do it now, but I'm just telling you. People like to associate names and things like Robert E. Lee and so forth. But look, research Bell. Talk. Let me check this number. It might be
okay.
U.S. Customs.
John Bell Edwards. I found him. Robin, you still there? Right,
yes, I am.
Okay. Okay. Yeah, I found him, Pianchi.
Yeah, L.A., I'll catch you tomorrow.
Okay, I'll see you tomorrow.
Take
care.
Yeah,
Robin, let's see. Robin, you and Beasley brought up some excellent, simple to, you know what, call me, you know what, call me in about 15 minutes, okay?
All right.
All right.